Did a breakdown with Birkenhoff episode 10 on the podcast. There we go. Better introduction. All right. I'm making sure we're all up and live on all platforms and I didn't press the wrong button or anything like that. Just real quick, I've recently changed my YouTube channel name to The Breakdown with Birkenhoff. I just think this is better for marketing purposes, just a better name, more catchy name, as Roundtable Decision wasn't super flowy as far as proper channel name should go. So, it's just a decision I decided to make. I think it'll improve viewership for my channel and everything like that, and I hope you'll think so as well. But before we dive real into the podcast today, I just want to quickly remind everyone I'm part of the Freedom Scoop Network at thefreedomscoop.com, and we are all a group of individual content creators that talk about the news and mass media and everything going on in today's world. And if you're annoyed about any of the mass media sources out there because they all say the same thing and brainwashing you, propaganda, whatever word you want to use for it, you can try the Freedom Scoop and see if you enjoy our type of content better. And hello, John, I see you here on YouTube, and I'm trying outside today just to see if that's any better. There should still be enough connection to support the podcast, but it'll be a good true test for today's episode on if any connection gets dropped, because I tried to do it outside when I was living at my parents and it didn't go too well. So I just want to make sure we have enough connection for outside sake as well, because doing the podcast in the dorm room gets a little boring, I guess you could say, and it kind of echoey in there too, so it wasn't the best audio content. So I decided I was just going to try outside, see if they can get it to work out here. Plus, it's pretty nice area where I'm sitting too, so that helps as well. So it looks like we're all good on everything here, and I see Facebook is working. And that was one thing, I recently just got the Facebook to work for a restream, so that's kind of neat-ish, I guess you could say. All right, now we got enough of the prolonged intro out of the way, we can dive in to today's episodes and today's topics for the podcast. So obviously the main topic, the main thing that we're going to be discussing today, or I'm going to be discussing out loud to you today, is the debates. We had the first presidential debate between good old Donald Trump and good old Joe Biden. And these debates were very loosely, if you could call it such. It is very much opposite of a high school, very formal type of debate. In the past, if you've watched any of my videos, I've talked about the UN and such, and I got the chance to do a model UN when I was in high school with my school. And we would go into these council sessions for your committee, and you would have to discuss your idea and whatever else. And these ideas then got talked about, and really it was just a massive debate between you representing whoever you were representing, then between someone else and whoever they were representing. And it was very much a concept of full-on debates and very, very, very formal. There wasn't very much back talk between other candidates. And that was definitely not the president debate we got between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And I've listened to several content creators, a lot of Freedom Scoop content creators with the Generational Gap stream and the Freckles and Britt show when they were watching it live. And Anna Voltes, I believe it was on the Generational Gap stream on Wednesday, it had to been, was talking about how he didn't like debates at all because a debate should only be a formal type of content. And obviously I'm speaking in broad terms of what he said. He may not support everything I said directly. In other words, he might say it better than I did, but his general content thing was you shouldn't really be doing a debate unless if you're agreeing to the rules and actually doing the debate and not whatever else you wanted to call what President Trump and Joe Biden were doing. And I do think that in a large part that is very true, because that was very much not a debate on what President Trump and Vice President Joe Biden were doing. So that was obviously something that was rather interesting. But I don't know if I necessarily fully agree with that statement, but you could definitely say it was political theater compared to anything else. And when I did the pregame debate of the physical day of the debate, I talked about how it was definitely going to be political theater. And I do think that that's what we got between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. There was questions or policies that did get discussed, but they weren't necessarily discussed to where you would 100% understand what they were going for, how they would vote, or what type of legislation they would want to pass from there. So in other words, if you came into the debate expecting something to learn stances or to see the type of candidate, although we know what one candidate is, you would end up being taken away with something that was completely different. And that something is what, I don't know if it necessarily helped. Now, if you were asked who I think won the debate or who I think had the better job, I kind of bounced back and forth between who I thought. Originally, right after the debate ended, I thought Donald Trump had the better performance than Joe Biden, and that's who I picked out of the two to have a better performance in the debate. But the more I think about it, I'm not completely certain and if I would say President Trump had a better perspective than Joe Biden, because there are several things that need to be taken into account. Who had the most speaking time? Who had the most dominance on stage? Who had the most charisma or whatever else you might want to say? Those type of questions went towards Donald Trump 100%. And it was rather interesting. And I was watching a Nuance Bro stream about his reaction to the debate live. And I watched it the day after on his Twitch channel, Nuance Bro. And I would highly suggest you watching Nuance Bro if you like this sort of content as well, because he does a very good job with his channel on Twitch and whatever else. But long story short, he did a poll at the end of his episode where he asked who was the better option or who won the debate, for better words. And the options were Trump, Biden, and Chris Wallace. And he didn't like that the person, one of his mods, put Chris Wallace as an option, but that's kind of besides the point. But the people right after the debate had Donald Trump at first and Chris Wallace at second and Joe Biden at third of who actually won the debate. And those who watched the debate would have realized that Chris Wallace was trying his hardest to control the candidates and try to have a civil debate compared to a reactionary back talk between the two candidates, if you could call it that. So as far as charisma and stage presence and just who had the most talking time in general, it was definitely Donald Trump. And I think that that was partly his strategy. Before I talk about Joe Biden's strengths and why I think he might have won the debate. But I think that was his biggest thing when going into debate, was he wanted to try to frazzle Joe Biden as much as he could. So right away, he started attacking Joe Biden. And later in the debate, he started attacking Hunter Biden, excuse me, one of Joe Biden's sons, Bo Biden, who Biden was trying to talk about more than Hunter Biden, was somebody that was in the military and got several medals, and if I'm not mistaken, actually died in service, but I'm not 100% sure if that is the case, so I don't take the word for that as far as Bo Biden goes. But Donald Trump tried to keep bringing up Hunter Biden, because Hunter Biden is a sore topic compared for Hunter Biden, for Joe Biden's sake. And hello Ron Helton, and he says, me will probably take a nap after this though. Yeah, I'm surprised to see you. I thought we were gonna be taking a nap after Ed's show, but thank you for at least tagging along at first. I highly appreciate that, Ron. But we're looking all good. I'm gonna see if we can't adjust this a little bit. Whoops. I'll make sure we still see me there. Computer gets a little hot when I have it on that platform there. OBS definitely sucks the energy out, so we're looking still good here. So all right, I'll continue on with my thoughts. I don't want the computer dying from heat exhaustion while we're on the podcast, but anyway, look, we'll get back on topic here. So Trump was trying to attack Joe Biden to the point where he would get flustered and lose his memory, or just attack Trump, or attack Chris Wallace, or just kind of have an outburst that would make him seem a little bit unstable as a potential president, because that's one of the major topics about how people vote in an election, and they're trying to vote for somebody who they view as healthy, who they view as stable, and who gives them the most amount of money compared to other candidates. Those are the two options. I remember a past government teacher in my community college basically saying people vote in two ways. They vote for who gives them more money and for who's healthy, who's the healthier candidate. And Joe Biden, obviously, if you follow any sort of media, knows that there's some sort of mental condition. And there's even been some theories on a Fortune or Reddit post, I believe, of a former campaign member who was basically saying that Joe Biden does have dementia. And it's been widely speculated that he does, but obviously it hasn't been confirmed, because that would be a huge blow to one of the two options of how people tend to vote for a president in any election. So I think that was President Trump's strategy to try to get Joe Biden off his stance, off seeing more civil. And I don't know if it 100% worked, because we have seen Joe Biden get a little bit when calling people fat or just attacking people for a general question. I believe he attacked a older gentleman about him asking about the Second Amendment and what Joe Biden thought of it, and he basically just kind of got mad, and it just seemed rather odd that he would attack somebody over a simple question about the Second Amendment. So we have seen Joe Biden do this sort of thing in the past, but I think that was President Trump's strategy, as I've said. Now moving on to Joe Biden and why I think he might have won the debate. Obviously, Joe Biden didn't have that bad of a debate performance. I didn't know 100% what to expect. I thought President Trump could get under his skin enough to where he would get just kind of down or just angry and just kind of seem dead, as we've seen in past debates. But I do think he had a very similar debate performance to his third debate performance on the Democratic debates, which a lot of people said that Joe Biden won, and probably is why he's standing there today against Donald Trump, even though you could argue that Bernie Sanders would never get a Democratic nomination, but that is besides the point. One of the major things about Joe Biden was that he was able to seem... He was able to say his points without slurring words or without just not making much sense. There was a couple times in the debate, and I can't remember exactly where in the debate, where some of the things he stated didn't really make much sense. And he had a few quotes or a few things he said that were would open your eyes for somebody who is a Trump supporter or conservative, for lack of better words, especially his comment over Antifa, where he didn't call them a organization. And I'm just forgetting exactly the statement. I even wrote it down on a YouTube comment, because I just thought that that was a comment that Donald Trump could go out against him for. And I'll try to remember it later if it comes back to my memory. But it was just a comment that stuck out to me about how President Trump could use that against him here in the future or for political ads. But that is Biden. So Biden in general had a very strong performance in the fact that he seemed rather stable and had his thoughts together and everything else. And I think that his expectations, you could say, were lower than Trump's, in the fact that by Biden having that performance, he was able to seem like the stronger candidate. But the biggest reason to why Biden won, and this kind of hints on the same topic or the same perspective, but isn't 100% following along that perspective. It's kind of like a side tree branch, or whatever you want to say, from the first point. And that was, Joe Biden was able to seem calm enough throughout the entire debate, even while getting attacked, that he came across as a civil candidate and came across as somebody that just seems more responsible to be a president. And that's something that is very huge, because what actual Justice Warrior said on his debate stage, I'm sorry, about his debate recap on his YouTube, where he basically said a lot of people get their perspective of the president or get their idea of who a president should be from the debates because they don't necessarily follow politics that much. Even though politics is all around them, and more importantly, news is all around them, they choose not necessarily to watch news. And that's a very interesting idea from when it comes off of politics in general. And I do think that I have several examples as to why that is the case. One of those examples is personally one of my parents, who chooses not to watch politics or news very much and only tends to read coverage off of debates or watch debates for her perspective of the candidates and their stances. So debates are a very good way and a very good perspective to base off of how someone did. And thank you, Ron, for the two lemons on DLive, and I'll get to your comments on YouTube here soon. But make sure we're all still up. Yep, we're looking good. And that's a big question when it comes to Joe Biden. And Ron says here on YouTube, what was the question Matthews asked that had nothing to do with actual policies that kicked it off into personal attacks? Then he says, I would bet that Biden doesn't make it too much if he got elected. Mental decline. Then he says, Biden said that there were an idea. Ideas that don't physically destroy buildings and attack people. Antifa is a terrorist group. Yes, that was the comment. He was saying that Antifa was an idea, not an organization. I believe that that was the quote he said. Thank you, Ron. And yeah, that was just something that just stuck out to me, because Antifa is a very, very, very sore topic right now in politics. Even if you're someone that is more moderate or left in the true sense of the word left, you probably don't really like Antifa very much, because they don't necessarily represent how you stand for very much. And a lot of times these organizations, and the left isn't the only ones to have it, you could argue if the Proud Boys are the right example of Antifa, or at least a organization similar to Antifa, but in general, the Antifa has been very violent, and it isn't necessarily an approach that everybody likes. And I think anybody who's normal, for lack of a better word, doesn't necessarily follow politics or have a stance based off of just what mass media tells you to believe, isn't going to like Antifa and isn't going to like Joe Biden's comments about it. And then Ron says, people should not vote if they are going to remain clueless until election time. Biden has a long history of lying and passing laws that weaken our liberties. And Biden has a very complex history to his name. And for your first question there, Ron, I don't exactly remember Chris Wallace's question of what kicked off personal attacks. I think the bad thing about what Chris Wallace did as a moderator, and this may be what you're referring to or thinking about, was he would ask questions about their policies directly. And obviously that's a good idea, so you get more of a breakdown to why they voted that way or why they made the law or any other question related to it. But what they failed to do, or what Chris Wallace failed to do, was make the question broad enough to where they could provide their own perspective of what they did. He made the question seem very much against that person. So I think as soon as Chris Wallace started to do that, and Trump was already kind of mad from the start, so I think that Trump knew from the very start that he was not only going against Joe Biden, but going against Chris Wallace. And you could argue if that necessarily was the case, but if he believed that, it brings up a good perspective to why Trump may have came across as so aggressive. But at the same time, I don't know if that's 100% true. But long story short, to answer your first question, I do think there wasn't necessarily an exact question I can remember, but I remember he made questions or made points at the president or at Joe Biden that were very direct and very personal. And I think that Trump, being the way he is, took that question as a personal attack and went out against him. And as soon as that was dropped in the civilness of the debate, because the first two questions were relatively civil, it just went on from there and the whole debate kind of fell apart. And then to your last question, Ron, about Joe Biden's history, I personally don't really like Joe Biden, but I don't like President Trump that much either. So going into this election, I don't necessarily have a candidate that I'm gung-ho for in the debate. And that's something that is rather sad. And Joe Jorgensen for the Libertarian Party isn't someone I like that much either. So I'm still going to be voting, probably. But long story short, when I say this, I don't mean it has 100% attack at Joe Biden personally, because there has been a lot of negatives on what I've said about Joe Biden. But he did, I think, win the debate from a perspective of the average American. Do I think he had the better points? I'm not necessarily sure. But going back to Ron's question, or Ron's point, was one of the best comments that Trump had in the debate was attacking Joe Biden's 45 years of government that he had, and he got very little done. And President Trump made it very, 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 very good point at several times to bring that up. He basically was like, You've had 45 years to do that. Why didn't you do anything in 45 years of being in the Senate or being in government power as vice president or whatever else? And that's one of the biggest things against Joe Biden that I think Trump has as a wild card is Joe Biden's record. And he even has records in the drug history and drug war of him passing laws similar to Kamala Harris in the fact of what they say is not what they did. So that, and although that was in the past, and even Kamala Harris incident was in the past, it's still important to take the past into account. And that's why President Trump gets attacked so much because of his past policies that a lot of people may disagree with or in general disagree with everything. But again, that's kind of besides the point. But that was one of the strongest debate lines. But Joe Biden also, in one of his many outbursts, but I don't know if you can necessarily call it an outburst, basically told Trump to shut up. And I think that you could take that as either, yeah, woo, Joe Biden is stepping up to Trump. You know, yes, he has some energy. He's not fully gone. That sounds a little harsh, but I think you know what I mean. Or you could take that as, uh-oh, he's starting to lose some of his mental. Trump's starting to get to him. This is what Trump's trying to do. You can stay in there, Joe Biden, or what else you might want to say there. And I don't know necessarily what I aligned, but I do think that that could have been, depending on your perspective, one of the stronger moments that Joe Biden had in the debate. But there are several major points throughout the debate, and we'll get into some of the articles here talking about the takeaways from the debate on if there even will be a second debate. Because I remember right after reading on Twitter and some articles about it that the Joe Biden campaign and Trump campaign in some ways might not even want to have a second debate after the first one went the way it did, because it obviously wasn't very civil, because Donald Trump and Joe Biden, for that matter, did agree to the rules of having this debate and the type of debate it was, with 2 minutes to answer the question and all this. And it didn't last very long, mainly because of Trump, because a lot of people said, I guess I'll talk about this point and then we'll get into the content. And I might be repeating myself a little bit, but one of the biggest reasons that I think Joe Biden may have came away as the victor was President Trump's constant attacks against him. And it obviously in the debate that can work, and you can seem as a strong candidate. Because most people, when they watch the debate, want to have somebody that's charismatic, seems healthy, has points that they generally agree with, but most importantly is charismatic. They want a president that they could see ruling their country, ruling them as the spokesperson for the nation. And President Trump was definitely charismatic, but he just kept attacking Joe Biden. And people who are Donald Trump supporters were a little bit angry at Donald Trump for doing that, because he wasn't able to let Joe Biden, for lack of the better words, hang himself on his points. Because a lot of times Joe Biden would start to talk about something and then Donald Trump would interrupt without Joe Biden being able to finish off his point. And that's something that's very important, because you do want to hear the full perspective of what the candidate has to say. And President Trump didn't really let him do that. And I don't think that was very smart of President Trump, because there were several instances, and actual Justice Warrior talked about this on his debate recap on his YouTube. So I would highly recommend you checking that video out if you're interested on this side of the debate. He mentioned several points throughout the debate where Joe Biden seemed to be starting to say a point that wouldn't be popular to his supporters or wouldn't be popular to the average American, but President Trump interrupted, and therefore he didn't necessarily let Joe Biden hang himself on that point. And there were several instances where President Trump would keep attacking Joe Biden over certain issues. And one of those issues was over Hunter Biden. I mentioned this a little bit at the start, but I want to make sure I kind of clear up what I was saying, because I just want to make sure I clear up and say exactly what I'm thinking in my head and make it a little more concise. And that was the fact, one of Donald Trump's points when he was going out to attack was attacking Hunter Biden. He did not let Joe Biden get away from answering that question. But at the same time, Joe Biden, instead of really answering the question fully, went against his son, for that lack of the better words, and started talking about Bo instead of Hunter. And that's something that is not good, I don't think. I don't know if it was necessarily a good thing, but he was able to avoid the question despite Trump ruthlessly attacking Joe Biden and saying, what about Hunter Biden? What about Hunter Biden? What about Hunter Biden? How come Hunter Biden took 2 point whatever from the Russian spokesperson or or something, whatever the exact comment was. But I'll read Ron's comments, and then we'll get into some of the articles here. Assault weapons ban, scary looking black rifles. And then, okay, people should not vote if they are going to remain clueless until election time. Oh yeah, I already read that. 1994 tough on crime bill ramped up the drug war. Minimum sentencing for drug laws impacted minorities the most. And then I read the assault weapons ban. Then Ron says, yes, sorry, I met Chris Wallace. It was something to do about why should people pick you over your opponent or something to do that effect. John and Ed, anyone? And then Ron says, that was the last question, I thought. But it definitely made for, it may have not, I'm trying to remember in the debate stage where it happened, but he did have a question like that. But I want to say that that was the last question he asked both of the candidates. So I don't know if that necessarily sparked a whole bunch of tension between the two candidates right away. Jorgensen makes me feel uncomfortable. Biden managed to weaken our liberties and all white, making himself a multi-millionaire, not in business, but off the backs of taxpayers and our liberties. And then hashtag bumbling Biden. And then Ron says, Biden telling Trump to shut up just shows he was losing control of his temper. Now maybe he will be trigger happy with the nuclear football. I saw exactly why Trump did that. Hammering Joe. He was trying to throw off Joe's handlers and unsettle Joe to show his cognitive decline. I'm convinced that they drugged Joe up or found a way to use an earpiece to help him during the debate. Ron, I was just about to talk about the earpiece. I think, was it Ed or Steven? I think it was Steven on the Steven and Garema show. I sent him a video clip of this YouTuber called The Body Ghost. Body Language Ghost. That's it. Body Language Ghost. And she basically looks at clips mainly in politics. And she's done a few like true crime clips of looking at criminals. But anyway, long story short, she does a lot of body language expert advice over what she sees the person do or kind of have a stance. But she's had a few videos about instances where she thinks that Joe Biden, she had a few instances where she thinks Joe Biden was not really being quite there with it. And her theory was that Joe Biden is using a earpiece because there's certain visual cues that you only do when you're trying to listen to something. What didn't make much sense. And one of those instances was about the debate on where he was looking up, like you're trying to listen to something, but he wasn't looking at Chris Wallace or looking at the camera, but at a separate sort of angle compared to everything else. And her theory was that he was listening to whatever the person was saying in the earpiece. And further to back up that argument, before the debate, Trump was wanting people to look at both of their ears for earpieces and talk about that as a point, but Joe Biden's campaign refused to have the ear and the earpiece, for that matter, checked. So I do think that Joe Biden is probably using an earpiece. And if you're interested in that content, Ron, I can send you over the link of the Body Language Ghost for her recap of the debate and her theories as to why she thinks he is using a earpiece. Or you could just look up the, I believe, Body Language Ghost on YouTube. Yeah. And then Ed says, Jorgensen makes me feel uncomfortable in my pants. Thank you, Ed. All right, we'll get into the first article here, the New York Times. And it just says, 6 takeaways from the presidential debate. President Trump and Joseph R. Biden appeared on stage together for the first time on Tuesday. We don't need to read that. Trump trampled over everything is their first point. From the opening bell, Mr. Trump came out as an aggressor, speaking over Mr. Biden in what seemed almost done by design. Pulled the former vice president who has run as a statesman promising to restore the soul of America into a mudslinging contest. The bulldozed Mr. Biden and the moderator Chris Wallace throughout the evening, but his goal, other than making for a convoluted contest, was clear. Mr. Trump seemed principally focused on undercutting and distorting Mr. Biden, rather than on presenting an agenda or a vision for the second term in the White House. And then there's a quote here which says, I've seen better organized food fights at summer camp, said Michael Steele, a Republican strategist, but Trump needs a clear win, and he didn't get it. So that was their first point. And obviously I've talked about that point really in long form on the video so far, so I'm not going to spend too much extra time on it. But if you're someone who believes that President Trump was doing this as a strategy to try to make Biden disoriented or off his wheels or whatever phrase you want to use, I don't know if it necessarily worked. But I do think there's an interesting strategy that Joe Biden could be using, and that is President Trump could be using. Man, I keep mixing the names. President Trump could be using, and that is the second debate, if it does happen, which I was speculative that the first one would even happen. But anyway, if the second debate does happen, that President Trump will come across as much civil in the debate rather than come out and attack, trying to make Joe Biden come as the aggressor right away and say, hey, look, he's losing his wills, or whatever you want to say. The second point, Biden at his strongest pivoted to the camera and away from Trump. Mr. Biden, visceral dislike of Mr. Trump particularly burst through the screen. He told Mr. Trump to shut up. He called him a clown and a liar. He tagged him as a racist. You are the worst president America has ever had, he said at one point. Keep yapping, man, he said at another. And see, these were instances where I do think that President Trump's strategy was getting to Biden. But at the same time, calling presidents' names on the debate stage or any of your candidates on not local elections, but Democrat elections or Republican elections. Anyway, you get what I'm saying. Anytime in debates, especially presidential debates, you are going to be calling people names. So I don't know if you can necessarily say that Trump's strategy was working 100%, but it definitely did have an impact. And especially after the point that Joe Biden called Mr. Trump a clown, you could kind of see in his body language that he didn't really like that he did that, because I don't think, although it came across to his viewership as like, yes, Joe Biden, yes, you know, woo, for the average person, you don't really want to come across as the person that's calling people by names. And I do think that Joe Biden did call Trump by names more than Trump called Joe Biden by names. So the average viewer could think that Joe Biden isn't a strong candidate in that way. The third point, Trump still wants to wear the outsider mantle. Mr. Trump is the president. He held his convention speech on the White House grounds, but he found some of his greatest success 4 years ago when running against Hillary Clinton as a failed Washington insider, and he is not ready to give up that angle in 2020. In the 2016 debates, Mr. Trump hammered Ms. Clinton over her failure to fundamentally change the country. She's been doing this for 30 years, he said then. He reprised the same line almost verbatim against Mr. Biden. Why didn't you do it over the last 25 years? Mr. Trump challenged him about the overhauling the tax code. In 47 months, Mr. Trump said it was one of the better, if clearly well-prepared lines. I have done more than you have done in 47 years, Joe. So that was one of his strongest points that I even talked about at the beginning of this video, of President Trump clearly attacking Joe Biden over his 47 years in government despite doing very little. So I won't spend too much time because we talked about that already. Trump would not condemn white supremacy or urge his supporters to stay calm. Now this was the biggest claim, and right after President Trump said all of the stuff he said and never 100% said, no, I don't like white supremacists, or yes, I denounce white supremacy, or just a clear one sentence, maybe two sentence line that anybody who looks at it could go, okay, we know what President Trump's stance is. He said something a lot more flowy and didn't really say no or any of the power words that Democrats want to hear when it comes to denouncing white supremacy on that angle. And I knew as soon as Donald Trump finished and didn't say those words that the biggest takeaway out of this debate was going to be that Donald Trump did not denounce white supremacy. That I could see that from miles away. And that was a claim right after when the debate ended. On any of the articles or Twitter, people were raging that Donald Trump did not denounce white supremacy. And I think one of the big reasons he didn't just 100% denounce it was he already in his mind denounced white supremacists or any of the attacks that happened in the past for white supremacy. And he was wondering what organization or what person does he have to denounce that he already hasn't denounced. I think that was going through Trump's mind because in his mind, like I said, he believes he already did so. But as far as the debate performance goes, I don't know if that was 100% smart for President Trump to do because of the instant articles that were going to come. But I don't know if he necessarily would have been able to say anything that would have 100% made the articles go away, even if he clearly denounced white supremacy. I don't know if there would be a claim. There would be an article like, why did Trump wait till this presidential election to denounce white supremacy or whatever else? And we'll go on from there. Trump did little to address the gender gap. I don't even know if I'm going to read in this one. Biden rebuffed the leftist label. I'll read that. Okay. The reason I'm not going to talk about the gender gap is essentially, I don't know if that necessarily relates too much to the actual debate itself. They didn't really talk about it that much. And if you're somebody that does believe it, then you already have your stance. And if you're someone that doesn't believe it, then you already have your stance. I don't think there's any changing that's going to happen from one debate of the president. But this is a big one about Biden here. Biden rebuffed the leftist label. Beyond his attacks on Mr. Biden's mental fitness, which redounds to Mr. Biden benefit by driving down expectations for his performance, one of Mr. Trump's most contested lines of his attack has been that Mr. Biden is actually a leftist or even a socialist, misguarding as a centrist. Mr. Trump's, whose narrow 2016 victory was aided by disaffected liberal supporters of Senator Bernie Sanders, who either stayed home or voted for a third party, has worked hard to form ideological divisions among Democrats. Mr. Biden repeatedly took opportunities on Tuesday to distance himself from the party's left wing without denouncing them, and he left little doubt who was in charge. The party is me right now, Mr. Biden said. I am the Democratic Party. And that was a big claim that Donald Trump wanted to make very clear when attacking Joe Biden on that claim. He said at several points that he lost the left. You need the left of your party to be able to win the election against me, because that is the large percentage of your supporters are those people. You know, he constantly was going against Joe Biden on those claims. And I'll read some of Ron's comments here. Of course, they didn't want an inspection, and there are earpieces that are invisible from a distance. Biden is the racist. There are many video clips of him making racist comments. Where are the videos clips of Trump saying racist garbage? The media sucks. He disbarred Obama, Indians, blacks, and called them predators. And that was, I'm assuming, with Joe Biden from your earlier comments. And as far as your first comment goes about the earpiece, one of my grandparents has an earpiece or a hearing aid for, I guess is the correct terminology for it, but you can kind of say they're the same thing, especially with the way the tech is today. You could probably use a hearing piece as a hearing aid as well. And they might even be the same thing for the purpose of the debate. But anyway, long story short, the reason I bring it up was the earpiece, you really have to look to be able to see. Or the hearing aid, you really have to look to be able to see. So if they use something similar to like my grandfather's hearing aid, then it would be very hard for a TV viewer or even somebody that's with Joe Biden in person to be able to see the earpiece without knowing that they have one. So, yes, there are solar technologies that Joe Biden could use for hearing aids. Now, CNN has 6 takeaways from off-the-rails first debate between Biden and Trump. First one, Trump doesn't condemn white supremacists. This is the president who has used everything as a dog whistle to try to generate racist hatred, racist division, the former vice president said. During a portion of the debate that focused on race relations, protests, violence, and policing, Trump tried to latch Biden to the violent and destructive elements of this summer's protests over the police killings of George Floyd in Minnesota, Breonna Taylor in Kentucky, and others. Even as Biden condemned violence, Trump also claimed that America's suburbs, which have titled in Democrats favored during his tenure, would be gone if Biden is elected. He wouldn't know a suburb unless he took a wrong turn, Biden shot back, adding that this is not to 1950 and Trump jogs whistle don't work anymore. Obviously, we've kind of already talked about the white supremacy claim with Trump, so I'm not going to spend much time on that. Disputing the election. Now, this was a big one, and at the time, I remember watching the Nuance Bro stream afterwards on Twitch, and he made a very good point or perspective that I didn't necessarily think about, was as Trump was talking about disputing the election, he did not like that. And I would argue that New Attsboro was very much a Trump fan compared to many of the other type of streamers or YouTube content creators I do watch, like Actual Justice Warrior or anybody like that. But one of his big claims was the fact of him wanting to dispute the election gives opportunity for when the election actually happens for the media to go against him in the fact of him saying that the election he never trusts. So if he does win an election, they could say from his claims alone that he might have rigged the election as you shouldn't trust it. So that was a big point that Nuanceboro didn't necessarily like from that claim. As CNN says here, aimed unleashing a barrage of misinformation and falsehoods about mail-in voting, Trump failed to affirm the one thing he was asked about, whether he would encourage his supporters to be peaceful if election results are unclear. I'm encouraging my supporters to go into polls and watch very carefully, Trump said, when asked what he would tell his followers in a post-November 3rd ward. And then one of the points here is anything but coronavirus. If Trump has an overwhelming strategy in the final days of this campaign, it is to divert attention from the coronavirus pandemic, which voters say in polls that he is badly mismanaged. It has been evident for months Trump is eager to move on. And if his goal Tuesday was to obscure his coronavirus record, Trump may have been successful despite Biden's attempt to eject it back into discussion periodically. Debate developed into arguments and bickering that ultimately did not center on the global pandemic, which has now killed 1 million people. And that was a big thing. I was expecting more coronavirus talk during the debate because it was something that's a very important topic for a lot of people, or at least people that follow media in general. I think a lot of people are tired of the mass media coverage of coronavirus, as some people find it as a hoax, but that's kind of besides the point. But there wasn't that much time speaking over the actual debate stage here. And CNN had a couple more points, but we've kind of discussed the other points in full detail. So I'll move on to this next article as soon as it loads up here and by The Wired. And it says the Trump-Biden debate was crazy. Okay. Not that Biden and the Democrats aren't trying. In the lead up to the first presidential debate, the campaign released a video calling Trump's taxes to attention and set up an online calculator. Do you pay more or less in federal income taxes than our billionaire president? Biden also released his own tax returns Tuesday afternoon. Republicans mostly kept quiet about the news, Trump tweeted about it. Pundits speculated about how the issue would play during the debate. As it turned out, the president's taxes were about the least confrontational aspect of the evening. The remaining 90-ish minutes were a barrage of interpretations during which very little sense was made. Each candidate got in their zingers, Biden telling Trump to shut up turned some heads. But for the most part, it felt like Reddit thread turned into a play written by an AI trained entirely on misplaced snippets from Aaron Sorkin's scripts. Points were made about COVID-19, about the economy, and about climate change, but in the end, they didn't make much sense. And the article goes on to talk about these details more out in person, but the main reason I pulled this up was some Twitter reactions from the debate. And I'll read a few of them because Twitter is obviously a political garbage dump when it comes to people's personal opinions on politics. This first one says, instead of watching the debate, I am canning pepper jam. This required me to spend hours cutting open and plucking the seeds out of dozens of tiny peppers, some hot. My hands are covered in them. That's right, I would rather set my hands on fire than watch this debate. The second one, everyone have their cocktails ready. This one, 2 minutes until the presidential debate, I am tuned in watching but already feel anti-papetary sadness for this mess that is about to be. The next one here, here we are, and it certainly be different from when 8 of us were live tweeting about the 2008 presidential debates on here. This one here, The Daily Show. The most important part of a debate, Chris Wallace offers the choice of weapons. And then it's just a meme picture of a sword and a pitchfork. And that was very much what the debate was about, because there wasn't very much policy covered in the debate stage. And that was something that I didn't think necessarily would happen from that point, because the debates were very much a personal attack rather than just based off of personal beliefs or policies, more policies than personal beliefs. And Ron says, an earpiece can be set to receive at a specific frequency to receive data from a transmitter. That is the difference. Damn it, it is not the president's job to manage the pandemic. Hell, the only thing the government should be doing, giving guidance, not mandates. He did all that he had to do, or could do. The Democrats fought him at every turn. Travel bans from China. They screamed, and Pelosi and others ran down to their local Chinatown and hugged the people there. Insane. Yeah, obviously, President Trump has not had very much help from anybody as far as this election goes, and especially with coronavirus, because there is a large argument that many people who are more speculative are making that this coronavirus is a hoax from the perspective of they're trying to make it outlast the election, and as soon as that election finishes, most of the stories we read about coronavirus will go away. And I don't know if that's 100% true, but it is a good point to bring up for that matter. Now, this next one, Trump campaign calls out second debate moderator who interned for Biden, worked for Ted Kennedy. And this is by Fox News. President Trump's campaign is calling out C-SPAN anchor Steve Scully, who moderating the second presidential debate, for his ties to former Vice President Joe Biden. Steve Scully, who serves as a host for C-SPAN, Washington Journal, interned for Biden after coming to Washington, D.C. as a student, according to Mayor Clark. He later worked as a staff assistant for the late Senator Ted Kinney, Democrat, Massachusetts, a Democratic icon who has honored the party's 2012 convention. On Tuesday, one of his tweets resurfaced, combining a photo of him and Biden. Gotta love that BP at the Biden Beach Bash in 2016, it read. Trump's campaign advisor, Jason Miller, tweeted in response, "Don't forget to change before the debate, fellas." C-SPAN said that the commission on presidential debates did not immediately respond to Fox News' request for comment. And then it has the Twitter photo of him and Joe Biden. But that was one of their big points, that Trump doesn't necessarily want to go against a moderator that is somebody that clearly has potential ties, not even ties, but potential ties to be someone that doesn't agree with him or favors a different candidate. And ironically, we see a hearing ad on the right there for Ron Helton, as Google is always spying on us, so make sure to be careful. Big Brother is always watching. But going back to the point, Trump doesn't want to go up against a moderator that even just has potential, not is someone that's against them, but just the fact of having potential could mean that the debate or the potential debate or debate for that matter is biased and lean towards one direction. I'll take a quick drink break and then we'll get back. Can't screw the cap. We don't need the cap. All right. Let me make sure we have everything muted so I don't make the mistake again as I've made before as far as this goes, so we can make sure we can listen to this part of this video here. Oop, wrong one. Now we gotta go Twitch. Where's your volume, Twitch? There you are. That's muted. Now we gotta go Facebook. Mute Facebook. About to play a video of President Trump on Fox News basically saying that he does denounce racism. So we'll hear that here in a second. All right, we're looking good. And then I'll go back to your comments there, Ron, before we change topics and go to our next perspective here. This is on Fox News, and Trump is basically saying that he wants to be very clear in condemning the condemning white supremacy and whatever else.
For crime bill. That's the super predator bill. So and when you look at it...
Looks like the video's having trouble playing out here, so let me refresh the page and then we'll try to play it again. This is the privilege of doing the podcast live. We not always can have a flawless podcast, but I'll try my best to make it as smooth as possible While we wait for the video to load, I'll go to this next article that is slightly different in matter, but not particularly. Trump should correct this statement.
Oh. Crime bill. That's the super predator bill. So he did the super. And when you look at it, but Mark Levin is right. He's 100% right. No matter what you say, it won't make any difference. And I have to say, I've said it many times, and let me be clear again. I condemn the KKK. I condemn all white supremacists. I condemn the Proud Boys. I don't know much about the Proud Boys, almost nothing, but I condemn that. But he should condemn also Antifa. Antifa is a horrible group of people. They kill people. What they do to people, and they're causing insurrection, they're causing riots. He doesn't want to do that, but the press doesn't go after him, and that's a really bad group of people. But I condemn them, and if I say it a hundred times, it won't be enough because it's fake news. Mr. President.
And here we go on to ask some questions for the president to be slightly more clearer on his statement. But obviously, if he said something like that on the debate stage, I think that people in general wouldn't be as angry against Trump as they were directly after debate ended, because he didn't make a super clear comment about denouncing white supremacy, the Proud Boys, or the KKK, or whatever else. Even though if you are a Trump supporter, you would basically say he's already condemned all those organizations. But he didn't do it on the debate stage. And if you're someone that just watches debates for your political news or who you're going to vote for, you wouldn't necessarily go away thinking that Trump does condemn white supremacy 100% and go from there. So a lot of people were angry at Trump for that comment. But I'll read Juan's comments before I move into these next two articles, because I don't want to miss out before I forget. I have a theory about some of those book deals. I can't believe that there is a wide audience for books for some of those politicians. What if the book deals were used to hide bribes? Then a second one. Trump has denounced racism multiple times. This media is crap. Yeah, like I was saying, Ron, he's done it several times. Even the famous incident of people saying that he does support white supremacy, I think it was in Charleston, was it? He was basically saying that, you know, there's good people on both sides. It's the comment you'll hear in mass media all the time about Trump. And that was a comment that wasn't... Okay, if you just take that comment and just take the incident, you would think that Trump is potentially a racist or a racist. But what the media did that is really evil is they took that context, or took what he said out of context. And taking anything out of context can drastically change the meaning of what someone said or what the stance is as the whole. So the fact that the media did that, they're obviously willing to go any perspective to be go against Trump. And that is why a lot of people do not like the mass media. Even if you're someone that isn't a full-blown Trump supporter, you are not going to like the mass media for the most part. I would, for lack of better words, the average person who doesn't necessarily follow politics always would look at what the mass media coverage has done and basically really not like it. There's two perspectives for when you watch mass media. Either you fully give into it and give into its propaganda and fully believe everything Fox News or everything CNN says. And yes, it's on both sides, but CNN is a lot more obvious about it than Fox News. But again, if you believe 100% what you're reading on CNN or reading on Fox News, and for lack of a better words, their propaganda and being brainwashed, that's one perspective. The other perspective is someone that reads this and basically is able to see through it, or see that the media is only doing one side or one coverage of something rather than covering all perspectives like media should be doing. So mass media is just garbage. And I've done several independent videos, I think at least 4 independent videos about mass media on my YouTube channel as far as independent videos go. But I've also done several discussions or speeches in college and community college and even in high school about mass media. So it has been a topic from as soon as I started following politics that I realized that the media, in the true sense of the word and what they're supposed to be, is 100% not what media is. But we'll go to this next article. Trump should correct his statements on white supremacists, GOP Senator Tim Scott says, and this is on CNBC. Republican Senator Tim Scott said Wednesday that he believes President Donald Trump needs to correct comments from his debate with former Vice President Joe Biden, where Trump did not explicitly condemn white supremacy in voting and violent right-wing groups. Scott, the only black Republican in the Senate, said, "White supremacy should be denounced at every turn. I think the president misspoke and he needs to correct it." He added, "If he doesn't correct it, I guess he didn't misspeak." Scott, a supporter of Trump who spoke at the Republican National Convention, gave these remarks to reporters before heading into a meeting with Judge Amy Coney Barrett, Trump's Supreme Court nominee. The White House declined to comment on the South Carolina senator's remarks, but when asked earlier Wednesday about the president's controversial comments at the debate, White House Communications Director Alicia Farah said, "I don't think that there's anything to clarify." And it goes on to talk a little bit more about further comments. And obviously we have seen a correction of Donald Trump on that phone call with Fox News. But if you don't necessarily watch politics outside of Fox News or outside of the debate, you wouldn't necessarily know that President Trump did denounce white supremacy if that's the only political content that you had here in the past. But then again, like Ron Helton has said, and like I've said on my channel before, he's already denounced it. Even if you're not necessarily a fan of Donald Trump, you do have to take what he's said in the past as truthful, because what he has said in the past has been truthful, because he hasn't changed what he said about white supremacy and stuff like that. You don't have to like the man to understand what he says and his perspectives. And then Ron says, during the debate, they wanted him... Wow. What the hell? Where did he go? Oh, there he goes. During debate, they wanted him to condemn militias and the Proud Boys. Neither of those were the white supremacists. Media is a dumpster fire. Then Ron says he should not have condemned Proud Boys if he doesn't know anything about them. There's the thing that brothers the hell out of me. Trump talks out of his ass a lot. Yeah, Trump is very much one a person that I kind of compare him a lot to like a frat boy in a large sense. He's somebody that isn't afraid to just kind of say what's on his mind and be very provocative about what he says. He's not somebody that's very civil, regardless of what you think about President Obama or former President Obama. I'm not very much a fan of Obama. He was somebody that was very well-spoken, and President Trump is not necessarily somebody that is very well-spoken. And that's why I compare him a lot to, like, frat boys, because I don't think that he necessarily takes the more educated route on what he says most of the time, and he just speaks out of his ass, as Ron Helton put it. And that is a good point about condemning an organization you know little about, but I think Trump is kind of on a double-edged sword, because regardless of what he decides to do or what he says, the media is going to condemn either his response. So if he does say, "I condemn KKK and, white supremacy in general, but I don't condemn the Proud Boys because I don't know that much about them and I want to be educated before I make a proper stance," I think the media would say, "Oh my goodness, President Trump doesn't condemn the Proud Boys. They are white supremacy. They are white supremacy because of these 10 reasons or whatever else." So I don't know about whatever President Trump said if the mass media would take a positive approach. But if you ignore mass media and say, "What should President Trump have done as a person or from a moral perspective," and not take anything else into account, I would say that you shouldn't really condemn an organization you do not know much about. That is a good point. And I do think that from a pure moral perspective, that's what Trump should have done. But I don't know if it necessarily would have been politically smart to say that and not condemn all three as talking points, even if you don't know much about it. But that does seem very weird to say. But politics isn't necessarily 100% truthful for that matter. This next one is by CNN. Trump says he and the First Lady will begin quarantine process after top aide Hope Hicks tested positive for COVID-19. So this is after the debate stage, and this was actually happened yesterday. I was debating to make a short live video about it, but I decided I was just going to save it for the podcast here. And that is essentially, well, you see it from the headline, but Donald Trump and his First Lady are going to be in quarantine and get tested for coronavirus. And we don't know if they are positive for coronavirus, but we do know that someone he has been in contact with has tested for coronavirus. I'll read the article here. President Donald Trump confirmed on Thursday night top aide Hope Hicks has tested positive for coronavirus and said he and the First Lady, Melania Trump, will begin their quarantine process while waiting for their own test results. The president's public schedule for Friday, released just after his appearance on Fox News' Hannity earlier in the evening, showed he was set to attend a fundraiser at his Washington hotel and travel to Stanford, Florida for a campaign rally. Hope Hicks, who has been working so hard without taking a small break, has just tested positive for COVID-19. Terrible. The First Lady and I are waiting for our test results. In the meantime, we will begin our quarantative process, Trump tweeted Thursday night. Hicks has traveled with the president multiple times recently, according to the debate in Cleveland on Thursday, He was also seen boarding Marne One along with several other of the president's close aides, Jared Kushner, Dan whatever, and Nicholas Luna, none of whom who wore masks on Wednesday as Trump was heading to a campaign rally. Okay, that's... How do I put this? It's funny to read something and then they kind of just throw in an extra statement or something that doesn't really 100% relate to what they are talking about. Because regardless of what you think about masks, the fact of you saying none of them that wore masks and it be something that 100% 100% makes you not have COVID is just rather absurd and something that even is factually not true. But at the same time, masks may help. Whatever you want to take the perspective on masks, but to just throw in and say that none of them were wearing masks and it be a huge deal within this article does make me chuckle a little bit. So obviously we don't know too much about the quarantine process for Trump and the First Lady, but we do know that they are going into quarantine and we don't know what their test results are yet. And it'll be interesting to learn what they are here in the future, because if they are positive, that could take a huge perspective for what Donald Trump does and his campaign and whatever else. But it could be similar to what Basement Biden has already been doing, so I don't know if Trump could have a huge negative effect, even though his voter base does seem a lot more energetic to what Donald Trump does compared to what Joe Biden does. And that even was a statement That even was a statement out there during the debate of President Trump attacking Basement Biden. And I even think he called him Basement Biden in the debate, if I am remembering right. And then Ron says, yeah, this BS, how many times does one have to condemn something before the worthless media stops with their nonsense? How many times has Biden condemned Antifa? And that is what even Trump brought up on that video clip I paid about him talking on Fox News and saying that, let me be clear. Because I do think, he even said it himself right after that, if I condemn white supremacy, you need to condemn Antifa. He basically said something similar to that on the debate. And obviously, Joe Biden did not want to condemn Antifa. And neither did President Trump on that debate stage. But anyway, as Ron was saying, he's already done it. J. Edgar says, it is confirmed the WHO doctor already has a statement out. So the test is... So wait... Ed, I wasn't able to catch all of your show. I catch the very end of your show before I started doing some schoolwork and now the podcast. But the test is confirmed. Like, President Trump does have coronavirus. Or what exactly is confirmed about the statement? I must have missed that article when I looked this morning, or missed it on your show. And Ron says, Trump is crude and blunt, and most Americans want their murders to be well-spoken. Obama bombed 7 countries and killed Americans without a trial. Most Americans are freaking idiots. And then he goes on to say, Trump needs to be called out for when he is wrong and supported when he does right. What does the right thing? The media forced him to attack Russia to prove he was not in bed with them. That is insane. And just going off of one of your claims there, there was a time during this whole coronavirus pandemic where very Democratic governors or government officials were saying, I just lost my train of thought. Okay, I remember. We're saying that President Trump did do good during the coronavirus pandemic through aid or through political content about it, or just through support, for lack of better words. And then Ron says, and not a peep out of the media when Obama invaded the Russians to serve alongside the U.S. troops in Afghanistan. That was the dumb move on his part. The Russians were brutal to the Afghan people. And then he says, during the war with them in the 80s. And then Edgar goes on here and says, Trump has COVID-19. It's confirmed. Well, thank you for that update, Ed. I don't know how I missed that, because I tend to gather all of my articles. For this podcast, I gathered all my articles last night, and in the morning I do a general read over of everything again, just so I don't sound like a Blood Marine idiot when I'm reading over all the articles or thinking about articles. But then I tend to check new coverage, so I don't know how I missed that, but I guess I thought it was part of something else. I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, that could make a very large impact for Trump and his campaign here in the future, now that he does have coronavirus. But there's still a lot of things he could do for media coverage, even in quarantine, live streams, you know, things like that, that Donald Trump can still keep his voter base supported and that. So I don't know exactly what Trump plans to do, but he's a very vocal, very outspoken, very travel heavy person. He's done a ton of campaign rallies compared to Joe Biden, or compared to really any president that I know of in my studies of presidents. This next one is by CNN. Texas governor limits election drop boxes to one per a county in sprawling state. Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued a proclamation Thursday limiting the amount of drop-off locations for mail-in ballots to one site per a county. This move significantly affects the Democratic stronghold of Harris County, which is the state's largest county by population. It is also the city. Well, Dallas is a city too, but cities are very Democratic and have a large population. That's why they are a city. Anyway, one of the most populous and covers a massive area and must now reduce its 12 drop-off locations to one starting on Friday. According to Elizabeth Lewis, spokesperson for the Harris County Clerk's Office, Travis County, which includes the reliably Democratic city of Austin, which limits its 4 drop-off locations to 1. Other large counties like Tarrant, Dallas, and El Paso County only had 1 drop-off location already in place. So I like how CNN worded this article, and I read it yesterday as I was just talking about, and read it this morning, and now reading it now. But I like how they buried that, even though they didn't necessarily do the 9-paragraph trick that a lot of mass media does, where they'll talk about their perspective, their ideas, their opinions, and then they'll put the actual facts or say a statement that derails everything they said in the 9th paragraph. But they didn't necessarily do that here. But Dallas is an extremely large population and a major city of Texas, like Houston is, and even for Austin, even though Austin is probably 3rd in that ranking, if I believe right. I don't see how Austin could be more, but long story short, they're all very large populated areas. So the fact that Dallas is willing to do a 1 drop-off box location and Houston isn't willing to do a drop-off location, or however you want to word the article there, it doesn't make much sense to me. Because if Dallas can do a drop-off location, why can't Houston or Austin or any other place for that matter? Because Dallas is a very largely populated area. I mean, obviously, the drop-off location and drop-off votes are something that is very, very, very important in this election. Because if you want the election to be as truthful as possible, you want voting fraud to be as less as possible. And obviously, any election is going to have a little bit of voting fraud. Maybe even not intentional, but on accident. There are several instances of voting where they didn't necessarily intend for it to happen. It's just human nature. And when it comes to mail-in ballots and that type of instance, there could be several points to where people could misread or misplace or whatever else, and mail-in ballots could go into the garbage rather than be tallied. Or if you're more conspiratorial or more negative or more pessimistic, you might think that people are doing this intentionally when it comes to voting fraud. And I do think that this the 1 mailbox location for mail-in ballots is a very smart idea in order to reduce the amount of locations and the amount of times this letter has to get passed through the post office system for a correct tally for the amount of votes. So I do think that it's very smart of the Texas governor to do this in order to reduce mail-in fraud more. And we'll read a little bit more about mail-in fraud, but I wanted to talk about these two issues before I go on a little bit more about potential fraud in this upcoming election. Because Trump has made it very clear that he thinks that voting fraud could be very rampant. He even said it in the debate at one point that he thinks that the mail-in voting is going to make this election potentially fraud. Ron says here, well, how confirmed? These tests are not worth a damn. The first case in Washington state, the woman tests negative and then positive and then negative again, infected 5 family members. Abbott limited the drop-off locations in response to one of Biden's campaign persons who was caught harvesting ballots, throwing away Trump votes. Harris County is heavily Democrat. That is Houston. Lived there in the 90s. Yes, it is Houston. And I don't necessarily want to dox myself, but I do live very near Houston. And I do live very near Houston in general. And Houston, and really, for lack of better words, every major city is going to be largely Democratic in nature. Austin's largely Democratic. Dallas is largely Democratic, and Houston is largely Democratic, and that's why Mayor Sylvester Turner and whatever else have always been in power, despite him going up against Tony Busby in the last election. But those who aren't locals don't necessarily know about that past mayoral election, but the Democrat ended up winning, despite a very largely funded Republican candidate who was going against him in Tony Busby. But again, that's kind of besides the point. And that's what I was going to talk about here in the future with the mail-in ballots and potential fraud. But before we discuss that, I was going to read this AP article. I was going to include it with the Donald Trump part, but I wanted to hold it off till here because it'll give a little bit more of a break before we just talk about Trump and Biden exclusively. And this is by AP News. Prazer, CEO, pushes back against Trump's claim on vaccine timing, by Linda A. Johnson and Jonathan Lemire. I probably butchered that. The head of Prazer, one of the drug makers racing to develop a coronavirus vaccine, told employees on Thursday he was disappointed that this work was politicized during the presidential debate, and tried to reassure U.S. staff and companies that they won't been too pressured to move more quickly. CEO Albert Bourreau told the employees that the company is moving at the speed of science rather than under any political timing, according to a staff letter obtained by the Associated Press. The only pressure we feel, and it weighs heavy, are the billions of people and millions of businesses and hundreds of government officials that are depending on us. By the way, hundreds of government officials is very low. There's like 2.1 government officials. And there's probably even more than 2.1, because I think that just takes like the national government officials and not local, city, state, whatever government officials. So yeah, anyway. Despite the top U.S. federal health officials repeatedly stating that the vaccine is unlikely to be available widely until mid-2021, President Donald Trump has insisted that a vaccine will be ready before the election day. During Tuesday's debate with former Vice President Joe Biden, Trump said he has talked with companies whose experimental vaccines are furthest along in testing. I have spoken to Prazer. I've spoken to all the people that you have to speak to, Miranda, Johnson & Johnson, and others. They can't go faster than that by a lot, Trump claimed. It's become very political. We are weeks away from a vaccine, Trump added. Prazer has said that by late October, it expects to have a date from its ongoing late-stage test that could show whether the vaccine is safe and effective. In his letter to employees, Broyle wrote, when the company hopes to have 100 million doses delivered by the end of the year. Those doses cannot be distributed until the Food and Drug Administration review Prazer's data and decides whether to use what is called an emergency use authorization that would allow distribution of the vaccine on a limited basis, with initial shots expected to go medical and other frontline workers, nursing homes, and people most at risk of catching or becoming seriously ill from the virus. And the article goes on and on. And there is a very large stance that this virus or the vaccine has become political, in the fact that Donald Trump in a large part thinks that governors and everything else are trying to push reopening of their cities or their states or whatever else back because of this election, and they want a President Joe Biden instead of a President Trump, and by making the economy wreck itself, it is a good way to potentially have Joe Biden come up as a candidate to improve the situation that many people, many Americans are suffering through right now. And I don't know if the vaccine is purely political in its nature, but I do know that if you do follow proper FDA guidelines, it takes years to pass a drug or a vaccine on the market. And the fact that this vaccine is getting rapidly developed, it is going to take a lot of time, but it is a very convenient excuse for people to use if it is become a political, and if they are trying to hold a vaccine. So I don't know if it's 100% true, but anyway. And Presler pronounced Pfizer. Oh yeah, it is called Pfizer. Thank you, Ron. Yeah, I knew in my head that it didn't sound 100% right, but I decided I would just go with ignorance and keep saying it and sound like I'm saying it right than saying it wrong. So anyway, thank you, Ron, there. Excuse me. His next one is about voting fraud specifically, and it says how voting by mail could cost Biden the election. As the coronavirus pandemic fanned across the country in the spring, Democrats looking ahead to the presidential election urged people to stay home in November. Minnesota's Secretary of State encouraged all eligible voters to cast their vote by mail. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam told every Virginian who can vote by mail to do so. The instruction echoed from Pennsylvania to Nevada, where Governor State Sivslok said, "We prefer that people stay home, especially if you are in a vulnerable situation." This message was heard loud and clear in an August Wall Street Journal NBC poll found that roughly half of Biden voters expect to cast their ballot by mail in fall. Unappreciated figure, and you might ask why not. Mail-in voting rightly depends on electoral with minimal fraud without forcing people to queue the strangers change transmitting a deadly virus. So my computer's starting to die, and since I'm doing it outside, I don't have access to a charger, so I'm going to speed run through these last articles and last points. So I was going to read a little bit more of this article, but the broad sense of what this article was saying was Biden could potentially lose the election because of voting fraud and lost ballots due to mismanagement. So instead of Trump mainly saying that he thinks it's going to be fraud towards him, because a lot of people, especially mass media, are very negative towards Trump, he was basically saying that in the Atlantic that Joe Biden could potentially lose the election just due to loss mail-in ballots. And in this next article, it talks about how 1,200 Pitas County absentee ballots were lost in the mail. And there are also worse claims that of mail-in ballots getting lost in rivers. And I saw many articles about Trump's claim about them getting dumped in rivers and it being false. But I didn't have enough time to look into it fully to know if that is 100% true, because just reading the headline without the article, or just reading an article and believing it to be 100% true, is obviously something we should know by now as being not good. So anyway, Peters County announced Wednesday morning about 1,200 absentee ballots were lost in the mail recently. A post on the Peters County Election Office Facebook page said more ballots were sent out and voters should receive a new ballot on Wednesday. Some ballots were submitted on Thursday, however. So anyway, they lost about 1,200 ballots, and that's just a very early on example of what is going on in this election or what we could be facing. Now, obviously, I'm going to be ending all articles or all of my podcasts till election on polling numbers and what Trump could be facing. But I see Ron says here, they keep changing the guideline on the vaccine as they learn more about it, and they are able to make a vaccine with these conditions. Yeah, that's a big thing. I don't know if I really trust the FDA or any of these organizations if they are able to make a vaccine this fast compared to how everything else takes. And be careful and whatever else. Or they already have the vaccine and you're just holding it. I don't know what exactly is going on, but it does seem a little bit fishy. And this is by 538. Trump's chances are dwindling. That could make him very dangerous. President Trump's quest to win a second term is not in good shape. He entered the Tuesday night's debate with roughly a 7 or 8 point deficit in national polls, putting him further behind at the stage of the race. If we look at the potential tipping points, states the race is a bit closer. I'm going to close out the Google Chrome, so I won't be able to see your comments anymore, Ron, or anyone else who is watching. Sorry about that, but I want to make sure I'm able to catch out these last articles because my computer is dying very rapidly. But we'll continue on here. That includes the poll from the 538 conducted with IPS, which surveyed the same groups of voters before and after the debate. While the poll didn't show a massive swing, most voters stuck to their initial preferences. More votes did rate Biden's performance favorably, and Biden gained ground relatively to Trump's bias on the number of voters who said that they were certain to vote for him, roughly a term of 2 or 3 points. Now, I'm not predicting that this will happen, but if Biden's national lead were to expand to a 9 or 10 point, which is consistent with the sorts of polling bounces we have seen in the past for candidates who were perceived to win debates, especially challenges debating an incumbent for the first time, Trump's situation could become quite desperate. So basically, 538 was polling people after the debate and seeing who they thought would vote for, who had a stronger appearance compared to the other person, and Joe Biden did win. And I do think in general that a large people who watched the debate would say that Joe Biden was more stable and did win the debate. But then again, most of these debates come down to personal preference, so it's hard to say who you would go for if you had to put your bet on who won the debate and who actually won by the eyes of God, so to speak, and not a biased source. Now, The Hill says here, new polls feed GOP's fear of Biden rout over Trump. And this is by The Hill. The new polls suggest Democratic nominee Joe Biden has a shot at blowing out President Trump's in Electoral College, which would have disastrous replications for the Republican Party desperately working to protect its Senate majority. The surveys were released before Trump and the First Lady Melania tested positive for coronavirus, extraordinary news with uncertain implications to the race. The news could pull Trump from this campaign trail at a certain point, at a crucial point in the race, but it also raises question about the health of the president and the stability of his administration. Before that, news was already having a troubled week at the polls. Trump was having a terrible week. And then it suggests a poll by Quinnipiac University that Trump carried 14 points to a 1 point lead by Senator Graham. So basically, this article is talking about how many people of Republican Senate could potentially lose their vote due to the fact of them potentially losing the overall election against Trump and Biden and from there on. Now, this last article talks about how, from Fox News, that Trump sees the approval rating increase after to beat Biden in polls. And it says Gallup released results on Tuesday claiming that Trump has saw his highest approval rating, 46%, since May, with approvals on his handling of issues other than his economy below 50%. The data was gathered in 2 weeks before the debate, reflecting an uptick from 42% Trump received earlier this September. That increased the polling company could be associated with the response to late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death. And that was a large part I remember reading on my last podcast and talking about with RPG passing away, that a lot of Republican type of viewers or voters are going to be very hyped up to be able to vote for a new Supreme Court justice, because a lot of the Republicans want to see a leaning conservative or leaning Republican type of Supreme Justice to overturn abortion or have more pro-Second Amendment type of rights than anti-Second Amendment rights and other items like that. So the fact that President Biden and President Trump in several other instances is having an increase in approval rating is very huge. And if I had more time, I would have discussed this a little bit more, but I don't want the computer to die out and to end like that. So again, I appreciate everybody for coming on to the YouTube channel and watching this podcast either live or later on Apple or Spotify, whatever else you might see a podcast. Again, my YouTube channel is The Breakdown with Birkinoff, and my Twitch and DLive are The Breakdown with WB. I have changed the YouTube name, but don't worry, I am keeping everything the same. I'm still going to be having my weekly podcast, The Breakdown with Birkinoff, and a solo video at least once a month, but I'm hoping to at least have a solo video once a week. I can't hold any of promises, but I do want to have very high content, so whenever you see that video drop, I want you to be excited to click on it because you like the content rather than just producing mediocre stuff often. So again, I appreciate you watching this video. Thank you, Ron, Jay Egger, and John on YouTube. And for anybody that is watching in the past on Apple or Spotify, again, thank you very much and peace out and hope to see you later. Oh, wrong one. Wrong one.
back.